Sleep apnea affects the way you breathe when you're sleeping. If untreated, breathing is briefly interrupted or becomes shallow during sleep. These breathing pauses typically last 10 to 20 seconds, but can occur up to hundreds of times each night. Untreated sleep apnea prevents you from getting a good night's sleep. When breathing is paused, you're jolted out of your natural sleep rhythm. As a consequence, you spend more time in light sleep, less time in deep, restorative sleep. When you need to be energetic, mentally sharp, and productive the following day. Over time, sleep apnea can also lead to major health problems, but there's hope. Stay with us to learn more about treatment options. We have some wonderful news for you. Go Healthy for Good starts now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Merritt and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Go Healthy Live and our website is hopetv.org/gohealthy. As a consequence of sleep apnea, you could be suffering from chronic sleep deprivation, which results in daytime sleepiness, slow reflexes, poor concentration, and an increased risk of accidents. If you stay with us, we'll show you how you can control the symptoms and get your sleep back on track and start enjoying what it's like to be refreshed and alert every morning. But first, let me show you an encouraging story from Sam. Please watch.
I've had sleep apnea most of my life, probably 60 years.
I would sense that his diaphragm was trying to work, but he wasn't breathing. And then I would have to give him just a little nudge in order for him to, and then he would gasp, and it was awful. It kept me awake a lot, just waiting for the next episode to happen.
Well, then I tried the machine, and I gave it 3 months. My best friend and wife here said, why don't you go ahead and try it some more? I said, why don't you try it? And she did. And it lasted about how many minutes?
Maybe 15 seconds. yanked that thing off.
He said, well, we take out the excess material that's in your neck on the inside, the uvula, and move your tongue forward. I said, I don't think so. And he said, well, he said, you'll die. I said, well, I think it'd be a better way to go than that. Very easy to put in.
I sleep better.
Okay.
Your blood pressure has gone down significantly.
If I get in the car and drive after a meal, I'd fall asleep. And I don't do that anymore.
No, I just would keep saying,
your eyebrows,
are you doing okay? Yeah. Are you doing okay?
Up to your hairline.
He would try to keep his eyelids open and so his eyebrows would be up in his hairline. It was clear up.
How am I doing now? And I stay awake.
He does. We have a life after dinner. Yeah. That's right.
Joining me today is Dr. Golam Motamedian, Associate Professor of Neurology at Georgetown University School of Medicine and a member of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, Clinical Neurophysiology and Sleep Medicine. And also Dr. Rod Willey, a member of the American Dental Association, Academies of Sleep Medicine, Dental Sleep Medicine and a diplomate of the Academy of Clinical Sleep Disorders in Dentistry. Welcome, doctors.
Thank you.
Dr. Motamedi, what is sleep apnea? Can you explain that to us and how it's diagnosed?
Yep. Sleep apnea happens when during sleep, instead of normally breathing, which is normally controlled by our autonomic system, we stop breathing. And that it means actually the drive, the central drive for breathing continues, as we see during sleep study. Chest and abdomen keep moving. But because of a closure of the upper airway.
I think we've got a graphic of this too while you're talking. You might just talk it through that. But yes,
sure.
Normally,
our upper airway or the area around the pharynx and larynx has a musculature that keeps the tone. Because when we breathe, we create a negative pressure or vacuum, if you will, in that area. So when we breathe, that musculature tone keeps the upper airway open. But what happens during sleep is we lose muscle tone. And that is actually a requirement for sleep. As the muscle tone is gone during sleep, especially during slower stages of sleep or REM sleep, then the falling of the tongue, it falls backward, loss of tone in the other musculature in the area results in narrowing or complete shutdown of the upper airway. As a result, while the patient is trying to breathe and all the effort is there, there is no passage there for air to go to the lung. And as a result, there is a buildup of CO2 in the brain. And after a while, like 10, 20, 30, sometimes 40 seconds, patient wakes up gasping for air to compensate for that and fall asleep. And this cycle repeats itself over and over.
Mm. Sounds so unpleasant. How common is it, Rod? How many people?
Very common. In fact, there's some estimates out there showing that there's approximately 18 million that have obstructive sleep apnea in the United States alone, with 90% going undiagnosed.
90%.
So the amazing thing is it goes under the radar. I mean, we look at people and we say, okay, well, we got high blood pressure, can't get to sleep, getting up too much, using the restroom, and daytime fatigue. And so we're getting, and we put medications on all these, and all too many times never really considering the possibility that maybe it could be a very serious condition called obstructive sleep apnea.
So what are the risk factors for it, Dr. Mosimedi?
Typically, people who have extra weight, in other words, increased BMI or body fat ratio. BMI is not exactly body fat ratio, but we can take it as an index, which means excessive deposit of fat. It's typically in the area, waist area, like someone with a bulging belly. But that's the tip of the iceberg. When we have that, we have also deposition of fat in the upper airway, in the interstitial, in the tissue around the upper airway. And as a result, people with excessive weight or obese, you may say, are at higher risk of developing sleep apnea. That's one risk factor. It has to do with the anatomy of the upper airway as well, because there are people who are fit, but they have sleep apnea. And also studies have shown, for example, in the United States, African-American or Asians are more prone to sleep apnea, even if they have the same BMI as a Caucasian person. So that has to do probably with the anatomy of the upper airway as well. Then there are other conditions, metabolic disturbances, hypertension, heart disease, a series of other factors that make a person more prone to sleep apnea. Gender plays a role as well. It's mostly a male disease until a certain age. After age 50, it doesn't matter. But below 50, it's mostly a male disease. But after menopause, the risk of sleep apnea in female almost triples.
Mm. Wow. So once they hit 50, the risk just begins to happen?
Both genders will have the same risk.
And is that because of hormones? Is it because women tend to put weight on then, or?
Probably combination of those. We don't know exactly, but the fact that menopause plays a role, it means probably hormonal changes are a major factor there.
Hmm. Dr. Rod, what are the health impacts of having obstructive sleep apnea?
Oh, they're huge. In fact, research has shown that obstructive sleep apnea reduces lifespan 7 to 15 years, because sleep apnea causes a person to be kicked out of the deep sleep, the slow wave sleep, the very deepest sleep where the repair of the body happens. And if you're not getting that repair sleep, then you're going to hit a wall a lot sooner in life. We all want to be 90 and we feel 70, but with sleep apnea, all too often you're 70 and you feel 90. I mean, even the common cold, we know what we do there. We drink lots of liquids and get plenty of rest. Of course, unless you can't get plenty of rest, because every time you go into the deep sleep, your brainstem has to kick you out of that sleep to a lighter level of sleep or wake you up completely so that you're able to breathe. It's also very hard on the heart. When the oxygen level goes down in the blood, when you stop breathing, 10 seconds goes by, 15, 20 seconds. The longer you go without breathing, the less oxygen in the blood. That records to the heart, and the heart says, uh-oh, I got to get whatever oxygen is left of that little toe. And so it starts pumping harder and harder and harder. shown that approximately 90% of people that die in their sleep due to a heart attack, the root cause is sleep apnea. We all know heart attacks happen from stress, shoveling snow, screaming at somebody. And yet, we also all know people that died from a heart attack while they're sleeping. There should be no stress on your heart while you're sleeping, unless, of course, you're not breathing. Then it's harder than ever.
Wow.
Also causes depression. You feel like you're walking around in a cloud because you're tired all the time. And so you don't get the rest that you need, and it causes a bit of depression. Which then when you go and you're a little depressed, so you go to the refrigerator at the end of the day, and you see a carrot in there and you see a piece of cake. Which one's going to make you feel better? And
not
so that's right. So you know how that where that goes to. It also has a 2.5 times greater risk for stroke with that. And new research that just came out, and I'm sure you saw this also in June. It was all over on CNN and the national news, showing that with severe sleep apnea untreated, it reduces the chance of cancer by 60%. Because at the cellular level, when the body is low in oxygen, when that cell, the natural cells are low in oxygen, it causes shrinkage. With cancer cells, it causes them to proliferate and become active. So huge problems with the body in many aspects all the way along, and major impacts on people.
So it's a bit of a vicious circle. The hypertension causes obstructive sleep apnea, but then sleep apnea accelerates that whole condition. So it's no wonder that it robs so many years off the life. Well, we're having a great discussion here today. Coming up next, we'll join Justin in the kitchen. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
This weekend, Hope Channel will air a 2-part special you don't want to miss. Give Thanks, Give Hope will show you how God has been uniquely using Hope Channel to change lives around the world. You'll be touched as you see how millions are being reached for Christ through the ministry of Hope Channel and how you can be a part of the Hope Channel miracle. It's a special program, and it's only available this weekend. Watch Give Thanks, Give Hope this Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific.
Revival is the renewal of the spiritual energies of the soul. It has to do with a new commitment to Jesus every day. It leads us to a deeper experience in prayer. It leads us to the diligent study of God's Word and a life of service and Christian witness.
Welcome back to the kitchen, Justin. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great.
What are you making?
Well, today we're going to make some delicious whole wheat pastry.
Pastry.
Yeah.
Now, that'll help finish what we made last week, because we didn't give them pastry recipe for that veggie
pot
pie.
That's true.
This is so kind of you.
Well, it's like putting the pie before the crust, as they say.
I guess they do.
Yeah.
They say it around here.
Yeah.
What's in it?
This delicious recipe is 1/3 cup oil, 1/2 cup of warm water, 1 tablespoon of liquid lecithin, 2 cups of whole wheat pastry flour, and 1 teaspoon of sea salt. It's pretty simple.
It is. That sounds easy peasy.
Yeah. So it's really easy.
Yeah.
We're going to mix our wet ingredients, mix our dry ingredients, and then put it all together.
Put them together. Sounds good.
So why don't you put that oil and that lecithin, right?
Yeah. Now, oil and water don't mix. So
yes.
We add the emulsifier, because that's going to float straight to the top. So we'll add a little emulsifier here.
It's emulsify-licious.
Ooh, there we go. It is a little sticky, though. All right, well, I'll just keep stirring here.
Okay, I'm just going to add the salt here into our flour.
Here you go.
And I'm going to make a little well here. And this liquid mixture is just going to go right in here. And I'm just going to stir it. We're going to incorporate this all together and then roll it out. Doesn't that look yummy?
You're going to want to eat it before I even get it into the pastry. The race is on, folks.
I know. I usually can't resist taking a bite out of the raw dough. When I make bread at home, usually half of it ends up going in my mouth before it goes in the oven.
Really?
Yeah. I know. Okay. Well, is this the part where I get to squish it with my hands?
Yeah. Instead of mush and slide, we'll go squish. Squish. We might need some more water. Are we going to be all right?
I think it'll be okay.
Oh, yeah. It's coming together just nicely, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if you want that off there.
Sure.
Whether there's a little more moisture.
This is actually a pretty luxurious feeling dough.
Isn't it lovely and soft?
It really is. It's
Yeah. That's the lecithin, isn't it?
Oh.
I find when I use lecithin in my pastry, it's like that.
Well, why don't we roll this out? I'm just going to...
Tip it all in?
Just tip it all in, yeah. It all ends up in the same place, right?
Well, this is true.
And through the magic of television, I don't know.
Do you want this over the top?
That is a great idea. These.
And then it just makes it
time-saving tips.
There.
Now this, depending on the size of crust, I should have rolled this or kneaded it a little bit longer, but hey, this is TV, right?
Well, it is. And, you know, tomorrow we might make something with this. So we have some time to get it into the pan,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, that's right.
So, while Justin does this, I want to introduce you to Don. Take a look at Don's story.
I've struggled with sleep apnea for probably 35 years at least. You know, we tried a lot of things. We went from strips on the nose to salves to great discussions with my pastor. He recommended that we do a sleep test. When those results came back, he said, "You've got a problem." He said, "I think we can fix it." Now, being a surgeon, he obviously would recommend surgery, which he did on my throat, taking out what was considered unnecessary parts. I was in absolute agony for the better part of 6 months. Then we went to what is known as a CPAP machine. And by the way, I've gone through two of these things. This little device is what I put into my mouth each night. It's very convenient. The very day that I brought this home and went to sleep, I had a different kind of sleep than I did with the CPAP machine that I've been using for 15 years. I have not snored using this device, and I've used it for over 2 years. If my wife was here, she would probably be standing right behind me and clapping her hands in regards to how she feels these days without being tired herself and without having to put up with this nonsense of sleep apnea. But from my perspective, this is a can't-fail device that has impacted my life and my wife probably more than any other single thing in the last 15 to 20 years.
I love how Don says, "It's impacted my life and my wife."
I've often teased my patients that I should be charging for marriage counseling because I got so many back in the same bedroom because there's no snoring going on.
I love it. Dr. Motamedi, I believe you have a polysomnograph here for us to look at to just see what a sleep study looks like in someone who has sleep apnea. Can you just walk us through this?
Sure. During sleep study, patients are told to come to the lab sometime in the evening. You may tell them to bring their favorite pillow, anything that makes them feel like they're in their natural environment, because you need sleep. And there is a phenomenon called first night effect. You're in a new environment, you may not fall asleep easily.
Yes.
So when they are in the lab, they are hooked up to the system. There are several electrodes placed on the scalp or some before the nose to, so you can see the flow going in, or in case they stop breathing, a few other electrodes on the muscles. Overall, they can sleep with all those attachments. It's not as hard as it sounds. Then we look at they sleep for overnight, like a normal sleep at home, and in the morning they are ready to go home. Then we review the data. What we look for is, during the study, if they had any sleep apnea, or what we call hypopnea, which means if there's complete closure of the upper airway, it will be apnea. If there's decrease in oxygenation and flow, it's called hypopnea. And they are overall, for practical purposes, they are considered apnea. Mm-hmm. And then we look
at... So we see here on this graph that the breathing just stops completely. Is that what we're seeing?
Exactly. Where you see a flat line while the other ones show activity, those that show activity are reflecting the activity by chest and abdomen, means diaphragm and other musculature that are working, because the brain is sending the signal that breathe. But because of the closure of the upper airway, you see that flattening of the airflow, which means practically the patient is not breathing during that period. And that may repeat itself, as you mentioned earlier, 100 times. Or there are patients who practically are not breathing during sleep, because we don't count less than 10 seconds. When we say apnea, we are talking about at least 10 seconds. And there are people who may stop breathing for even 40 seconds or longer. So practically, you are not breathing for a good chunk of your night's sleep. And as a result, there is increase in CO2. There is change in the what we call sympathetic tone. And there is a lack of that refreshing, restorative sleep. So in the morning, patients are tired, what's usually called excessive daytime sleepiness, and also a change in mood. They may look grumpy. Usually that's the complaint with the spouse. And they have memory problem. So a sleep study will show these findings. Also, it will take a look at the structure of the sleep if they go into deep stages of sleep. Normally, you should spend about 25% of the sleep. A typical sleep apnea patient spends zero. They never enter the deep stages of sleep because of that continuous disruption in sleep. Or REM sleep, which is a period when we have dreams, and it plays a role in memory consolidation. That is gone. And also, sleep study can tell us if the patient has what's called periodic limb movement of sleep, which means kicking in the bed, and that also disrupts the sleep. Or if they have other condition like bruxism, tooth grinding, they may not sleep well, they may not feel refreshed in the morning because of that.
Mm. So those are some of the signs and symptoms. What other signs and symptoms might we see, Rod, with sleep apnea?
Well, I just touch a little bit about the bruxism, because that kind of rolls in a bit to the dental. And a person's best way of trying to fight off sleep apnea is clench and grind, giving the body, the airway, just a little bit of throat, of muscle tone in the throat. Right. And so the clenching and grinding is an indication of that, which can jam up the jaw joints, creating then temporomandibular joint disorder, a lot of headaches, and fatigue of the muscles, limited opening, ringing in the ears. I have people that come in and say, I wake up in the middle of the night, my ears are just ringing. And then after we get an appliance, which keeps the jaw forward, it takes the pressure off of that, and that ringing goes away. So some of those, the clenching and the grinding, there is a correlation between that and temporomandibular joint and obstructive sleep apnea because of those areas that are on there. I think the weight gain is a very interesting thing, because one of the symptoms that you have in there is there's something called leptin that's produced in deep sleep. And that also limits a person to feeling full and not wanting to eat starches and the wrong types of foods. And so it also then can set you up for weight gain. And, of course, weight gain creating more sleep apnea. And so it's a snowball effect that continues going higher as time goes on. So a lot of different things with the body that are amazing, how that all of these things connect and what happens in the body to get the rest to that relieves these symptoms.
Mm. Now, Dr. Motamedi, one of the common things to use for treatment is CPAP. Can you explain to our viewers what CPAP is and how it works?
Sure. CPAP stands for continuous positive air pressure. Basically what it does, by pushing the air through the upper airway, it creates a pneumatic splint. It's a non-pharmacological treatment. It's a very nice and still a first-line therapy. What it does by opening up the upper airway during inhalation, it lets people breathe, so opens up that closure in the upper airway. The downside is that unfortunately about half of patients may not tolerate it. Mm-hmm. And if the patient has severe sleep apnea and they don't respond to CPAP, then we will look into other possibilities. But still, for first-line, CPAP is a very nice treatment without any pharmacotherapy. It's just air opening up the upper airway.
So a mask that blows air tries to keep that airway open. Now, Dr. Rod, what is an alternative to CPAP or maybe used in conjunction with CPAP that you're using?
Well, the oral sleep appliance is the mandibular repositioning appliance.
We have a graphic here.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, and feel free to just talk through this.
And the appliance itself, it works as mechanically holding the airway open. So when you go into the deep sleep, your jaw begins to fall back, your tongue is connected to it, it falls back with it, blocking the airway out, starting the obstructive sleep apnea. The appliance holds the airway open by keeping the jaw forward and doing the adjustments along the way that is there. So when you're looking at the animation of this and you can see how the actual structure of the anatomy and how it's blocked out, just simply keeping that jaw forward can help to reduce that. The appliances were originally developed in the early 90s. And it went through 15 years of scrutiny and testing and research and all the stuff that has to go. Mm. And in 2006, it received its nod of approval from the FDA, as well as the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the branch in medicine that the neurologists and the sleep specialists from the medical standpoint all belong to.
Right.
They did the research on this, and their official word that they came out with is that it is very effective in the mild to moderate for treatment of obstructive sleep apnea as a treatment for it. And it can also be used as an alternative to the CPAP for severe sleep apnea for those who are not able to use the CPAP. It only works to a point. If it's super severe, then it will not do it. You can usually get about a 3 times reduction in the amount of times of slowed or stopped breathing. So it's effective, sometimes partially effective if it's too severe. And then what's really cool, and we were just talking about this, is the combined therapy where we would, if it is too severe and we have a patient that cannot do the CPAP, they're not able to tolerate it, then we would place an appliance, reduce it down as much as possible with just the appliance, getting it adjusted to the correct level. Once we find that position, then we would reintroduce a minimally invasive CPAP, maybe just something that just goes in the nose instead of the full mouth.
Right, just the nasal pillows.
Right, just the nasal pillows, and at a reduced pressure to augment the appliance, allowing the appliance to be the workhorse, and it's something then that the patient can live with and get the best of both worlds. Because really what we're all about is getting something that can be successful in treating the patient.
Wow, this is fascinating. Up next, Sean, our trainer, is ready to show us some exercises, but first let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, don't outgrow your sleep apnea surgery. Dental device effective for obstructive sleep apnea? And short sleep, short life. A study was done in Istanbul, Turkey, in patients with obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA, to assess the long-term effectiveness of the surgical procedure submucosal uvulopalatopharyngoplasty, or UPPP for short. The respiratory distress index dropped by over 50% in almost half the patients. Snoring disappeared in 83% of them, and excess daytime sleepiness decreased in 68%. Postoperative body mass index increased during follow-up period, which lasted 3 to 8 years. Those who did not respond to surgery gained the most weight. It would appear that a UPPP can reduce symptoms, but is limited in its ability to treat OSA. Post-op weight gain decreases its success even further. So if you've had a UPPP, be sure to keep your weight down. In a Swedish study, 90 patients with OSA were fitted with a mandibular repositioning appliance to evaluate the effects of this treatment. 48 completed the study. There was a clear trend towards less apnea, less oxygen desaturation, less daytime sleepiness, and less snoring. So a dental device may be an important part of your treatment. While OSA is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, it has also been found that short sleep duration is strongly linked with hypertension, obesity, and cardiovascular deaths. Several research groups have sought an association between the two. A Brazilian study found that sleep duration may be associated with lower average oxygen saturation in OSA patients. A Japanese study found that short sleep duration was associated with higher cholesterol, whereas respiratory distress index was associated with higher triglycerides or body fats. So don't rob yourself of sleep, especially if you have OSA. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
This weekend, Hope Channel will air a two-part special you don't want to miss. Give Thanks, Give Hope. We'll show you how God has been uniquely using Hope Channel to change lives around the world. You'll be touched as you see how millions are being reached for Christ through the ministry of Hope Channel and how you can be a part of the Hope Channel miracle. It's a special program, and it's only available this weekend. Watch Give Thanks, Give Hope this Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific.
When the Apostle Paul described the great battle between good and evil, he emphasized the importance of putting on the whole armor of God. This week on Hope Sabbath School, we'll talk about that vital choice, accepting the radical protection that God alone can provide. We hope you'll join us for Hope Sabbath School.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Sean has some toys for us today.
What have you got?
So I got a chair and I got some resistant bands, all right?
Okay.
We got a question last week about folks who wanted to do exercises in a chair. So I figured,
nice,
let's do a couple exercises. So let's have a seat, all right?
All right.
First one, all right, come to the edge of the chair a little bit.
Okay.
And I want you to put your hands right here, right above your ears. All right, take a deep breath. And what I want you to do is blow it out at the same time, crunching this abdominal area, all right? Come back up. You could do about 15 reps where you're keeping your eyes forward and blowing out the air each time you perform the crunch, all right? All the way up. Again, about 15 reps, working that up top, the top part of your abdominal area, right?
Okay.
Again, blow out. You don't want any air in the abdominal area as you crunch, all right?
Okay.
Second one, all right? We're gonna still keep our hands here.
All right.
But we're gonna work the obliques, all right? So now we're gonna go to the side, all right? Now you can target that one side. We won't alternate. We're just gonna target that one side and do about 15 to 20 on that side, all right? Again, you wanna blow the air out of the abdominal area, out of your stomach, rather, and crunch that oblique. Again, the oblique is right here on the side, complementing the upper part and the lower part of your abs, all right? All right, let's switch sides so we don't have one funny
okay.
side. Go ahead.
Yeah, the other part of the lungs feeling a bit
go.
Lonely. Bit walking, stuffy. Huh?
Walking around lopsided. What happened to you? My right abs are stronger. All right. All right, so again, that's working the upper part of the abs and then the obliques, all right?
All right.
So here's another one. You can use your resistant band. Again, you can use this at in your office, you could use it wherever you want, wherever you're seated. And I want you to take the handle and put the handle right in your palm of your hands, all right? Make sure your eyes are forward. And all I want you to do is press all the way up, okay? You're sitting on the band, so make sure that you're sitting on the band. If not, it's gonna pop up and sting you, all right?
Yeah, it is.
You don't want that. That'll
sting
wake you up.
In the back of the head.
That'll motivate you to sit on it, all right? Let's go, come on. Give me 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All right. Working your shoulder, the cap of the shoulder. Everybody loves a nice shoulder. Makes you fills it out.
Yeah.
A little bit, all right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move this to the side. All right. But we're going to stay. Let's do a little something fun with the legs. Work the quads. All right.
All right.
It's called a pyramid. We're going to do one leg extension on the right side, and then we're going to do one on the left. Then we're going to go do two on this side, and then two on the left. You keep building up this pyramid.
Okay.
Now, you kick out. You can kick me if you want. Right?
Ah, and then slip I finally side. Have permission.
All right.
Oh, yep. Okay.
And then now we're going to add two. One and two. All right, two, one, and two. Make sure you squeeze that quad. We're adding three. Go. One, two, and three. Believe it or not, it'll start burning. When you start making a little funny face, like, that's when you know it's working. All right, we're going to four. Come on. Let's make it a five. One, two, three, four. Switch sides. One, two, three. Four, last five. One, two, three, four, five. Last one. One, two, three, and four. Keep that leg up here. That leg is shaking a little bit. All right? So again, you're shaping up this quad right here. All right? So when you come up here, you're going to do this little kung fu kick right up here. All right? And squeeze that quad every time. You want to work out, and when you exercise, you want to... What happened? You see that? There's the face. Zoom in on that face. That's the face. So, and last but not least, to complement it, right? We work the quad. So let's work the abductor and adductor muscles, all right?
All right.
Adductor brings the muscles together, the
okay.
legs together.
Yep. Abductor, we add them?
You add them together and abduct. I'm away.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So let's go to the edge of the chair.
Yep.
And open and close. Now, you can pick about 10 to 15 reps. This one burns, all right? You see people on the adductor-abductor machines.
Right? Yeah.
All the way out. You're just using your body weight.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you look at Dr. Narada, her abdominal area, because she butt squeezed on that chair before.
No.
You weren't?
No. I was just kind of touching
really?
It. Yeah.
Excuse me. All right? So there you go. So what we mentioned at the beginning was your abductor, which are, move here. Your abductor are the ones that bring your legs apart, and your adductor, ADD, are the ones that bring the muscles together, all right? So a great way to work out your upper body and your lower body.
Wow, that's great. Huh, all from a chair.
All from a chair.
Thank you.
Can't go wrong.
In just a moment, I'm going to answer some of those questions that you've sent me through Facebook and text messaging, and I love them. Keep them coming. But first, here's another Ageless Advantage. Enjoy.
Nuts, like almonds and peanuts, are full of healthy antioxidants. But not every almond or peanut on the supermarket shelf has the same antioxidant punch. Most of the nut's antioxidants are found in their outer soft covering. When this is damaged through peeling or blanching, half or more of the antioxidants are lost. Choose raw almonds over blanched. And enjoy your peanuts with the brown papery covering intact. Choosing nuts in their natural state is another ageless advantage.
We have a great offer for you. If you call now and ask us a question about sleep, disturbance, sleep apnea during our live broadcast, we'll send you a copy of this beautiful book free. So call us now at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or if you're calling from overseas or texting your questions, the number's 301-960-5144. The free book offer is restricted to viewers of our live show here in America. Now, if you missed a previous episode or you missed one of those recipes that you want to download, then visit our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. I want to thank you again for your comments and your questions. Let's take a look at some now. Adelina, she posted on our Facebook page, "Dear Dr. Narada, you're such a great TV hostess. It's a joy to learn from you and with you. God bless." Thanks, Adelina. I'm glad you realise I'm learning with you. Doris called, "My son has asthma, has become afraid to exercise and to cause a flare-up. How can I encourage him to exercise?" Great question, Doris. One thing about asthma and exercise, as you know, I have it too, is it's important to keep fit, because if you're puffing from just unfitness, you blame your asthma and your asthma gets a little bit worse because you're working harder, so maintaining fitness is good. However, if you've lost that fitness, just start to build slowly. For a young person or a child, You might need to turn it into a game and be out there exercising with them. Take their mind off it, distract them. And, you know, as you increase, so your asthma and also learning to breathe properly as you're exercising, your asthma tends to have less of an impact on the exercise and you start doing more and more. David called, how many hours of sleep should I have at night? I think I'm going to throw that to our experts. I suspect it's 9, but let's see what Dr. Mothamedi says in just a minute. Thanks for sending your questions. Keep them coming. If you have a question on sleep apnea, I've got the experts for you. And the number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Call now. My experts are waiting for your questions. But let's take a look at David's story. Watch this.
I've had sleep apnea for probably a little over 20 years. In the middle of a conversation, I'd gone, sound asleep. And it's kind of embarrassing in a restaurant. It's like, you're worse than a kid. We can't take you to a restaurant, can't take you any place. The more weight I put on, the worse the sleep apnea got. The more weight I put on, that I couldn't hold down a job. I wasn't able to function like a regular human being and get anything done. I had gone through a sleep study and they showed that I had 116 interruptions in an hour. We tried everything. They changed the mask, they put on a different mask, they put on a different front piece, they changed, turned down the pressure, they turned up the pressure, nothing helped. So I got the machine home and it turned into a hat rack, basically. And I would go back and try it every once in a while, hoping that by some miraculous recovery, I would be able to get through it. My emotional state had gotten so bad to the point where we had gone for counseling to try and save our marriage. I had never in my life ever considered hurting myself, and I had gotten to the point that I had actually thought about committing suicide. I went to my pulmonologist, and he told me that he strongly suggested that I go to a local dentist who is trained with the oral appliance. He said there's a lot of patients that he's had that aren't able to tolerate the CPAP machine. He says, you have to do something, you have to. He didn't mince his words, you're going to die. We went in and made an appointment and they fitted me right away for it. There was no learning curve or anything. It was just put in your mouth and go to sleep. I've lost a few pounds already too. I think that the sleep appliance literally has saved my life and it saved my marriage. My life has started to come back again. It started to come back to being the person that my wife had met years ago.
It's beautiful. Now, how many people can tolerate? You know, Dr. Mothamedi mentioned about 50% of people struggle to tolerate CPAP. What about the dental device? How many can tolerate that or struggle with it?
We have over 2,000 of the appliances in place with over 90% success rate. Now, what I got to do is preface that success rate. What that means is they're wearing them regularly and that we have had at least a 3 times reduction in the amount of apneas that they're having.
So
it may not be completely taking it down, it's certainly reducing it dramatically.
And in terms of tolerating it, you think 90% tolerate
it? I have just a handful that we're not able to tolerate it. In fact, I can think of 3. And one was severe gagging, one was a lady that was had just lost her husband and she was in her late 80s and just decided she didn't want to do it.
Right.
And another one that wasn't wearing a denture and couldn't, it fits right into a denture. But she was not able to do it because she couldn't tolerate anything in there. Other than that, they are able to wear it, and that's because it's a custom-made device that is specifically there to fit into their mouth.
Thanks. Now we have a caller on the line, Lillian from Texas. Welcome to Go Healthy. Lillian, what's your question for my experts tonight?
Okay, hi. Well, I have sleep apnea, and it's, I don't remember how many years I've had it diagnosed, but I've tried CPAP machines 2 or 3 times, all the different kinds of masks. And the last thing that I'm doing is I'm using an oxygen machine, a concentrator at night, and it's at level 2. Is that helping the sleep apnea at all? I mean, I feel more rested, but I never heard about that mask, so is the oxygen helping?
Dr. Motamedi, would oxygen just by a normal mask help?
Yes, in case a patient has a significant drop in their oxygen during sleep apnea, it's called desaturation. Mm-hmm. If it's at a critical level, then oxygen therapy as part of mask, it can be built in the cannula, can go through the mask, and it's necessary. Or there are some pulmonary conditions when the patient needs to be on oxygen. So under those circumstances, yes, it's necessary and important.
It can help. Great. Phyllis from Louisiana, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. What's your question for us tonight?
I was just wondering, what is the safest and most effective way of treating it? And I had two friends who had surgery, and it was not successful. Matter of fact, they both passed away. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the idea of what it was about, but my boyfriend does have sleep apnea. I know he's not breathing, and I see it, and he's also gaining weight, but it's also after 50. And then he teases me because he says that he doesn't snore, that I snore. And I'm also past menopause, so maybe I am snoring.
All right. Tell us about the surgery, Dr. Motamedi. She has two friends. It didn't work for them. I'm not sure how close to the surgery that they demised, but not successful, clearly.
Right. I think we're talking apples and oranges here. There are different types of surgeries and different types of apnea. In general, for mild to moderate sleep apnea, there are surgeries that are effective, and it's called either UP3 or just tonsillectomy. For example, in kids, tonsillectomy can cure the problem. Or if it's not too severe, that mild apnea apnea surgery, which basically removes part of the soft palate, kind of the crowded upper airway. The surgery tries to get rid of it, excessive tissue to be removed, tonsils, soft palate. And in some, there are different variations. In some centers, they also bring the tongue a little forward, things like that. But there's a for severe apnea, the final, ultimate gold standard is a heavy-duty surgery when the mandibular bone is moved forward. That way, we are opening up the space for the tongue not to fall back. But that is reserved usually for severe sleep apnea that's not responsive to CPAP or not indicated for oral appliances. So for the scholar's case, depends on the circumstances, how severe it is, and a lot of other details that probably her physician would be able to discuss with her.
And it sounds to me as though Phyllis probably should be going to her doctor. Her and her boyfriend both should be seeing their doctor and having a full assessment done.
Absolutely. And actually, Phyllis brought up a good question that sometimes it's the spouse that complains about the other spouse, and then when you test them, it turns out to be the other way around, or quite often both of them have the condition.
Correct.
And yes, the best approach is for both of them to be studied.
Yes. Teresa from South Carolina, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. What's your question for us today?
Thank you. I am a CPAP patient. But I honestly don't use my CPAP that much because, A, I don't notice a difference, but, B, there's kind of an odor with it. I was wondering, could I maybe use some essential oils near the filter, or maybe there's a hygiene issue or something like that, that maybe, I don't know, is there some way that I can get rid of this odor so that it's not as unpleasant to use? Mm.
Do either of you have some expertise in helping the odor of a CPAP machine?
Keeping it clean, in general, is important because obviously if you don't, it's a wet environment. And definitely mold, the possibility of mold is there. So they have to keep it clean, wash it off. They can ask their CPAP provider for more detailed instruction how to clean it. That would be my concern, to make sure that they're
not. I don't know. I'm not that familiar with the CPAP machine, but I'm an OBGYN, and our anaesthetists sometimes put a little bit of strawberry-flavored lip gloss inside the mask before they pop a patient off to sleep, and they can't smell the yucky smell of the mask. But I don't know, would that work?
There's no harm in that, but my concern would be to make sure that there is no mold in it. Let's make sure.
Oh,
first,
absolutely.
Do no harm, no infection.
Yes, absolutely. Shirley from California, welcome to Go Healthy for Good, Shirley. What's your question for us this evening?
My question is, does a person who believes they have sleep apnea need to get a referral from a primary doctor, or can they directly go to a sleep study program?
In general, it depends on the insurance. First, I have to admit that doctors are less educated about insurance, how things work behind the scene, but I can tell you, depends on the insurance. There are patients who can directly come to us, to specialists and subspecialists, but in general, I think the best approach is to get a referral from your primary care.
Right. What about getting
Yeah, when it comes to our practice, certainly we pre-verify insurance and find out specifically what it is. And then we would work with their physician. There are some insurance companies that require that there is a prescription that's written, including Medicare, for the appliance itself. As a dentist, what we have is, as a dentist, we are able to treat sleep apnea because what we offer is a dental solution to a medical problem, still a medical problem. So we work with the doctors to get the diagnosis, and then we would offer an alternative to the CPAP for those that it's appropriate with that we're able to get treatment for and help a huge population that otherwise has no help. Yeah. So it depends on depends on the circumstance for certain with what insurance company it is, whether or not you can just go straight forward or not.
Great, thank you. Now, Catherine from Connecticut. Catherine, what's your question for us today?
Why do people gain weight with this sleep deficit? I don't understand that.
All right. Yeah. Now, Dr. Rod was explaining this before. Just give it to us again in more detail.
When you're not getting sleep for whatever reason, if all of us are up till 3 in the morning and we try to get out and then we function the next day, we're going to be a bit irritable. We're going to feel as though we're just not quite on our day, on our game. We want to sleep the night and then seize the day. That's what we want to do. But when you have sleep apnea, it's difficult to do that. So you feel as though you're walking around, you know, kind of under a cloud. You're just not quite on your game, which causes a bit of depression. When you have depression, then you're feeling down, and that can tend to cause a person to do two things: not be active. You'd rather just kind of sit on the sofa and watch TV.
So you're not going to burn your calories.
That's right. So lack of activity, and then also the depression is going to cause you, for a lot of people, to eat the wrong foods, and maybe too late, or even getting up in the middle of the night, can't sleep, got to grab some food, you know, and then during the day, another one is trying to stay awake because they're tired all the time. And taking a lot of Pepsi and soft drinks, caffeinated drinks that have a lot of sugar in them, causing weight gain.
Right, and then you also mentioned the leptin, which is a hormone that is produced, that acts as an appetite controller, which is deficient if you have sleep deficiency.
Exactly.
Right, we have a text question here. When comparing CPAP with the dental device, which one is more effective for sleep apnea?
Well, here's the rating. I can answer that. The gold standard for sleep apnea is the CPAP, period. Mm. It works 100% of the time on a mannequin. The problem is there's a huge segment of the population, depending on research that you look at, about 50% have a very difficult time wearing that.
Right.
In that segment, or if it's in the mild to moderate where you can use an appliance, sometimes it could be either one. The appliance is more convenient, easier to wear, and effective for those. So depends on the situation.
Well, thank you so much, doctors. It's been wonderful conversing with you this evening. I've learned lots. And if you have OSA or think you're at risk, then address the issue. See your doctor. Ask for a full assessment. You can see there are a lot of options there for the treatment of this very important disorder. Remember, stop smoking, don't use alcohol as a sleep aid, lose weight, be sure to pursue the treatment that's most effective for you. In the long run, your heart, your body will thank you for it. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. On tomorrow's show, we're looking at good posture in the office. You don't want to miss it.